You thought you could escape me so easily. No, being on Not Another Magic Podcast three times was not enough for Spruik. He demands more. Rise, Jeff. Rise, Jack. Serve me again by interviewing me.
Fresh new hell is this? Good Jeff, are you okay? Are you in one piece? It's okay. Just breathe. Breathe with me. Meditative breathing. Okay, remember? Like we talk.
Oh man.
All right, say your happy words. Say your happy words.
No pants. Yeah.
There you go.
Well, that's true. Okay, I don't have any pants on.
Well, they burned away. So where did this is new. Where are we?
We're back in the North Carolina woods. I thought we escaped, but apparently we actually died. So much dirt in my lungs.
Oh yeah, I mean, you know, hell, North Carolina. I guess they're both pretty much the same. Why is there a computer just here though?
Yeah, I don't know. It's weird to have microphones just out in the woods, but. Yeah, okay. I guess that's.
Hey, do we need to sit down and do that? You know that thing we used to do a long time ago, a couple of years ago, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how to talk to people unless there's a microphone in front of me. So, yeah. That's,
okay, cool. You take that side. I'll take this side. Well, what do we talk about here? I guess we can just let people know where we've been would probably be the best option.
Yeah, which you know was hell. We spent a good couple years in hell. Things got pretty dark, pretty bad. In retrospect, I'm relieved to be back in this reality, even if I'm a little rotted and some of my limbs aren't all here. Man, I don't remember getting gored, but didn't we escape the Minotaur? I thought we escaped the Minotaur, but apparently not.
Man. Huh? I think we tried to, but it didn't quite pan out.
Alright. Maybe some memory in hell is a little weird. I mean, God, that election cycle, I'm so glad that's over with. I'm glad that was the dark universe and not the real one. Whew! What a relief.
You know, I was really disappointed by the complete and utter lack of chairs in hell, though.
Yeah, it's all spikes, just like, sitting on spikes.
Just spikes everywhere. I mean, people were polite, they were okay. I picked up a secretary down there, which was a good change.
Yeah.
I mean, she's a good girl. She works very hard. But yeah, just no chairs, no water. Like, hell was more a place of mild inconveniences than anything else.
Mm-hmm. Though actually, it's weird. As the year went on, like all these awesome people started showing up, like Prince and David Bowie and Alan Rickman. It was amazing. All of a sudden, like hell got pretty cool.
Yeah, things were kind of on the up and up, and you know, I guess it's okay that we came back here. They have chairs. That's always good. Yeah. Chairs are nice.
I mean, but... I assume there's chairs. I'm just still sitting half in this shallow grave, but you know, that's. It's all right.
Well,
it's comfy.
I'm popping a squat, just nobody can see it. I got that Slavic blood, so we just pop squats everywhere.
Man, shitting in your own grave, man.
No, it's only like bad if you can actually smell the corpse over the smell of the shit. Like take a big whiff. See, can't smell the shit over the corpse. Right?
Yeah. Oh,
see.
Yeah, that's because I just don't have a nose anymore. I mean, that's actually
it's a good look for you there. Yeah. I like it. It really brings out the angles on your face. I love it.
You got that Fallout 4 ghoul look going on. All right, yeah.
Hey, smooth skin. You should bring the property back to Obsidian Entertainment.
Anyways, so with all of that out of the way, since we do have microphones in front of us, do we want to talk about what happened 2 years ago?
Welcome to the NecroCast!
Exactly. We have been brought back from the dead. to bring you people yet another podcast. Now, I've stated many... Well, I guess I should introduce myself since I'm an egotistical prick.
If you're out of the Magic community for, like, a month, everyone forgets who you are, so...
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah, like, I still have people who are like, hey, man, we miss you writing crappy insults about people. But, like, you know, so if you don't know who I am Jack Antonio Sabato De La Hoya King Kong Bundy LaCroix. Formerly a upstanding contributing member of the Magic community, and I suppose I'll talk about that in a moment. And I've said many, 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 many times there is a very limited list of people who would get me back into podcasting, and joining me tonight is one such person, Jeff.
Yeah. Oh, man, they put an E on my name on the crappy 2x4 cross they put over my shallow grave. God damn it.
Well, at least they didn't write rest in pepperoni on yours like they did on mine. I imagine would be very greasy and uncomfortable.
I mean, that was your catchphrase, to be fair. Everyone loved it. I still have t-shirts, I think, somewhere, you know. Jack LaCroix, rest in pepperoni.
I don't remember where that came from. I have been forced to eat lately. Yeah, I would say, yeah. But in case you've never heard of this show before, we are not another Magic podcast where we talk about Magic at some point, I swear. And that's about as much as we can probably guarantee this episode, I think. What about you?
Yeah, we are, as usual, we're going to talk about as little Magic as possible. Just enough to get by and meet that, you know, that MTG cast requirement, you know.
Oh, yeah, because, like, if we didn't talk about Magic, I have no idea where we're, like, who would want to host us, especially since, you know, we're not legally citizens anymore, so I don't think we're entitled to the rights of having our podcast posted somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
So, I guess, Jeff, the best thing to do here is, I guess we can talk about, you know, any pertinent things that have happened since we passed into the Shadow Realm and came back.
Oh, man, so, like, for reals, the last thing we were going to record was the GP Minneapolis recap last year?
Yeah.
And, like, that was going to be the last gasp, and then Skype failed, and Skype recorder failed, and...
And we just never met up in the middle since there, basically. I was always working, and you were always doing something.
Yeah, I mean, we did totally record that awesome final episode where we both died, and it was, like, just this massive horror spectacular.
Whatever happened to that episode?
Oh yeah. I mean, if you haven't heard it, you should really go back and listen to it. It's real good.
I could have swore we posted it somewhere. Wasn't it up on MTG Cast?
Yeah, I thought so. Hold on.
Let me look through the archive while you're rambling, okay?
Yeah, since then there's been, like, another GP Minneapolis, which I did not make it to. I don't know if I've even made it to a GP since then. No, that's wrong. I went to Providence last fall. I didn't make the most recent one, so... So yeah, both GPs that I went to since we last recorded have had other GPs since. That's how long it's been. boy, I mean, I drafted a lot of Kaladesh in Providence over a year ago. That was fun.
Like, I've vaguely paid attention to Magic over the last year and a half. Like, I would occasionally pull up Mythic Spoiler for old time's sake.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I still read spoilers. I listen to not as many podcasts, but I still listen to, like, Leaving a Legacy and some other podcasts that still publish. Not nearly as many, but, like, I keep up on Magic, but it's probably been, like, a good month since I played.
as we were talking before the show, the last time I played Magic, I think, was, like, 3 months ago, because I unexpectedly got invited to a Commander event at our store and won the entire thing, which was pretty hilarious. And I literally just showed up just to have something to do, because, like, my internet was out, my kids were away, my wife was working, and I had read every book in the house. So I was just like, all right, go to a Commander event, right? And I showed up and wrecked, and that was a good feeling, you know, except for the fact most of the people I was playing against were, like, middle schoolers. We had one other old fogey in there with me, and that was about it.
Mm-hmm. Like, I've been playing Commander since it was called EDH!
So, no joke, when I was there, I somebody came up to me, and it was a kid I literally have watched grow up through this shop, and I was sitting there playing against the old fogey, who I also knew. And the kid was just like, ha ha, you've got gray hair now. And the old fogey looked up and he's like, he's been coming to this card store since before your balls dropped. Show some fucking love. And I was like, ah, oh, that's why I came, was those feelings. I remember now. But yeah, I haven't really kept up with Magic either. And I guess do you have anything else you wanna spill, Jeff?
God, I haven't made it to pre-releases. I think actually the only Magic I've played this calendar year has been Legacy. Which is kind of hilarious.
Well, Legacy just never goes out of style either, though. So I can understand that.
It is the easiest thing to, like, you know, I'll play some Legacy FNM or whatever, because my shop's awesome. And then, like, disappear for a couple months and then come back and be like, yeah, I can just play the same deck. That's fine.
Yeah, I mean, like, yeah, it's the only time where you can disappear, you know, go be an adult, come back, and still do reasonably well with the same deck.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
People are still playing Miracles. I don't know. Like, it's weird. Like, they drew so many cards and didn't have a Divining Top or a Counterbalance, but, you know, they still beat me because, like, Palace Jailer is... Because, yeah, you don't... You never get an attack through once they get that out. That's weird. Fucking Miracles becoming the Monarch and shit.
I haven't even kept up with, like, Magic. Like, the last Magic coverage-related thing I kept up with was I went to... I was going to reply to something Emma Handy said, because she used to be a writer on Card Confidants, and I've known her a few years, and she's awesome. And I looked, and she had 5,000 followers, and I was just like, when did that happen? Yeah. What? Hell?
Yeah.
Oh, shout out to Emma Handy. Yeah. She is blown up, and I am seriously impressed by how far she's came since she wrote for Card Confidants. Didn't I used to like do Card Confidants or something like that? I wrote for them or co-edited or something.
Yeah,
I don't remember.
I had articles that went up on there. Even like, I don't know.
Yeah, like it was funny because like right after I dropped out, and I'll get to all that in a moment. I would still get like tweets from the people who were writing, and they're like, hey, you know, Trevor and Renee are kind of busy. Do you maybe mind, you know, uploading the article? And I would be like, I literally have forgotten my credentials on how to get in. And they would be like, well, you know, don't you, aren't you active? And I was like, no. And, like, I love all the writers who contributed to Card Confidants. They were all fantastic people. But it was just, like, I feel very guilty because I was like, oh, yeah, this is going to be a new website. We're going to push. And I got all excited about it. And then 6 months later, I disappeared. I very much pulled a Bernie Madoff of MTG content creation, I think. I took everybody's hopes and dreams. And I was like, all right, I'm emotionally fulfilled now. Thank you all. Goodbye. So, like, you know, props to everybody at Card Confidants. I miss you all. I'm sorry. Like, I couldn't do it anymore.
Yeah. And then we died.
And then we died, and we went to hell, and now we're back.
Yeah.
So, I guess I should I spill my guts about what happened to me?
Yeah, go for it. I mean, I'm still trying to get my guts back into what's left of my body, so, you know, don't mind me.
Use the duct tape, okay?
Oh, yeah. There is, yeah, it does literally grow on trees around here. It's pretty amazing.
Why would, oh, yeah, we're in North Carolina again. Yeah, I remember. Yeah, I you know, pardon the
keep
camo.
Keep up with the fiction, man, the fiction. Stay consistent.
Pardon the camo printing, because I guarantee every single one is camo print here.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I've mentioned this before, but last year I kind of had a nervous fucking breakdown about producing content for the Magic community, and I lost my mind for a couple of months, I guess is the best way to put it. And I woke up one day and I was like, this doesn't make me happy anymore. I can't produce content for this community. Like, I can't do it. And it was nothing against, like, the Magic community at large. There's so many people in the Magic community I love. It's just I woke up one day and I was like, I can't do it. Like, I can't bring myself to write something. And so I had a couple of weeks where I basically was spiraling out in depression. And, you know, I smoked a lot of weed, a lot of marijuana, because that's what you do when you're depressed, you know.
Yeah.
And there came a point during all of it when, like, the new season of Samurai Jack came on. And for those of you who don't watch it, and this is going to sound totally silly, but this was really when I started turning around. Like, basically, the entire new season was about Jack, the character, not me, overcoming his self-loathing and his depression and realizing maybe he really was the person that people thought he was. And I was sitting there, and I remember, like, crying watching that, because it was essentially what was going on with me at the time. And I've had people over the years, you know, tell me that my writing was quality and that I was talented and that I could do so much more with it and stuff. And so basically I started a different venture and I went in a completely different direction than anything I've ever done before.
Yep.
And should I elaborate? Do you think that would be okay?
It's not exactly off brand for you, but
well, that's true.
Just lean into it a bit more.
I started a blog where I write erotica on, you know, demand, basically. And I have met some amazing people. I've met some wonderful people. There's a lot of the kink community is very different from the gaming community in that it's much more like there's competition as far as producing content, obviously, considering what it is. But it's much more networking friendly, you know, professional friendly. You know, how can we help each other? And as for this month in particular, I've just got done writing, you know, how to write competent erotica, how to write competent horror. And both all of that was very well received. And, you know, writing erotica has also given me a chance to explore writing more complex and emotionally deep characters. You know, even if it's blatant, like, fetish feel. Okay, like, even if it's completely obvious what those characters are. It's given me the space to heal as a writer and to heal as a human being. And I'm back where I'm at, and I'm very, very happy now. I hate to say it, I will probably never write gaming content again, just because it's, like, I got burned out, man. Like, I did it for 8 years, and it was fun, but there was a definite shift in the tone of the community, not just with the Magic community, but I think with gaming at large. And we started progressing towards a much more, it was less new person friendly, because as nerds, we like to get entrenched in the deep lore. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. We'd like to be the holders of the lore and stuff like that. It was less new person friendly, and it was also just less networking friendly. Because a big thing I was an advocate for back in the day was we, you know, work with other websites. I always had a standing offer for people from, you know, Manor Deprived, all kinds of other places. You know, hey, if you want to come work for, if you want to write a guest article and you need a place where you can say cuss words without KYT getting mad at you, by all means, we're here. And I was always, you know, trying to network with a lot of newer writers. And there seemed to be a shift away from that, where even people who were dedicated content producers, I started noticing that they were struggling to have their voice heard on even very, like, serious issues. Like, you know, just yesterday, I logged on to my Magic account, and people were, like, a guy had wrote a very competent article talking about the toxicity of the gaming community towards women.
Yep, Dan Fournier.
Yeah, and thank you for pronouncing that, because I was going to butcher that guy's name. And, you know, even though I personally think that there was more, probably a more nuanced way to write about it, Dan had a very good point in which, you know, you can't be a passive member of the community anymore against its sins, okay? And I think that was a very good stance to take, even though it's one I've heard several times before. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like, it turned into the same old roving ball of, well, I've never seen sexism personally. You know, fuck you, man. And, like, that was something that had started when I first dropped out. And it's only gotten worse in a lot of, like, specifically with gaming writing. And I'm not sure what the root cause of it was, but that's honestly what pushed me out of it. I think that's what led to me having a nervous breakdown, because I reached a point where I felt like there was nothing I could do as somebody that had produced content for 8 years that was good enough for people to pay attention to. And it was, you know, it was a dark place to go, man, because the Magic community meant a lot to me personally. Mm-hmm. And you know, even Jeff, people like you, Chewy, Travis Hall, Jason, KYT, the SVU, everybody, I loved all of these people so dearly. And to feel like, not that my voice couldn't be heard by these people, but that my voice was disregarded by the community at large, that really hurt. And so that's why I basically just pulled completely out and went in a different direction. And I think it was very funny, like, the first month I did it, because everybody was just like, well, are you still writing? Well, of course I'm still writing. I'm writing porn now. Well, why are you writing porn? Do you get, like, do you get, like, the weird request? Oh, I mean, you know, like, yeah, but they're nice. They say please. And so, you know, here I am now. I have a fairly successful erotica blog. I still shit post on the daily, and life is good. I'm in a much better headspace than I was.
Yeah.
So
with the recent, like, the whole shitstorm surrounding Dan's article, like, it's a lot of the frustration I hear and see is that, like, we're still fucking dealing with this shit. Like, I mean, we talked about just, you know, being nice and inclusive to people when we recorded more than 2 years ago. Like, it's there's a lot of frustration. Like, aren't we fucking done with this? Like, when are we gonna fix this problem? Like, why?
I understand that frustration because you can really only pound your head against a wall for so fucking long.
Yeah.
And, you know, coming from the guy who used to post big anime titties on in people's timelines that were obviously meant to be safe for work. Okay.
Yeah.
There comes an element with every community where you try so hard. You try so hard to be taken seriously. You try so hard for people to accept you for who you are and to do the right thing and for people to at least respect you, even if they don't like you. Mm-hmm. And, you know, to be constantly disregarded based on your gender or your skin color, I completely understand that anger. I really do. And I'm saying that as a, you know, middle-class, bisexual, white guy. Like, I totally understand that. But there's also the other element to it where we have a lot of members of the community that are like, well, you know, I've never personally experienced it. I've never had to, you know, deal with this myself. So what are you talking about? Why is there this constant controversy? It's obviously doesn't exist. And the thing
people who deny that it's an issue. It's like, of course it's an issue. We've been talking about it forever, like since the dawn of magic. Like,
I mean, Jeff, the fact that me and you are sitting here talking about it after being gone for 2 years, and it's still a hot button issue, like that says a lot, people. Like, me and Jeff have been more or less out of the loop for 2 years, and this is still going on. You have members of the community who are telling you to your face, hey, guys can be creeps at events. Can we maybe do something about this? And y'all are just going to be like, no, you know, like, no, it doesn't exist. I've never seen it. Folks, it's time to get your collective heads out of your asses and smell the ashes. Like, there's more going on than you want to admit.
Yeah.
And denying the existence of something simply because you have not observed it. Well, my question there is, no. You know, you didn't observe the goddamn Revolutionary War, but it still fucking happened, didn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, and if you haven't seen sexism, you haven't fucking been paying attention.
Oh, it's everywhere. And, you know, taking it from like my corner of things now, okay, I try very, very hard to be inclusive with the writing that I do. You know, I have trans characters, you know, gay, lesbian, bi, all kinds of stuff. But because of what it is, I will occasionally get a request where it's like, well, I want the guy to like spit on the woman and tell her she's worthless and, you know, blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, dude, I can't do that. That's, you know, like, I understand that's dominance, but I personally am uncomfortable writing about something where women are treated as objects and they don't get it.
There's plenty of that.
Yeah. And like the thing that a lot of people, I think, need to realize about this is just because, again, you haven't observed it yourself doesn't mean it doesn't exist. If you really, honestly, like, want to see what we're talking about, pretend to be a woman on Twitter for a week. Seriously. Like, I did this years ago when I was a 16-year-old role player, okay? I'm showing my age there, Jesus. And, like, the amount of shit that you will receive within the first couple of days, especially as you try to ingrain yourself into, you know, this community, or, you know, not even into the magic community. Like, let's say you do want to do the role play thing, you know, into that community or whatever. Yeah,
just
you
like are going to copy paste like a tweet you made a week ago that like no one paid attention to and watch yourself get flamed. It's really
easy. And even more than that, like, you will see more cock than you ever thought you would see in your entire life.
Yeah, open up your DMs if you really want to experience it.
Yeah, and, like, that's not a joke. Like, when I was doing it, too, again, when I was a 16-year-old eternally horny role player that didn't want anybody to was by, like, when I was doing that, too, like, dude, so, like, fucking every day I get the DM where it's like, hey, you up? I am. And then, like, you know, not even, like, you know, if it was a nice dick, I might have replied, but it was always, like, a just gross men doing gross behavior. Like, I'm trying to, like, find a polite way to say it, but all of this shit is very, very real, and if you are still so convinced that it doesn't exist, pretend to be a woman on Twitter for a week. That I dare you to do it and see how long you fucking last. And, you know, try to integrate yourself into the magic community while you're at it. Just do it. It'll take 5 minutes and an email address on Twitter.
Yeah. Mind you, I still maintain that the magic community overall is pretty good. There's a lot of great, great people in the magic community. But I think, like, almost any community, when it reaches a certain size, like, it's just going to be, like, 5 to 10% shit. Like, no matter what your common thing is that you're about, there's just, like, 5 or 10% of the people who are interested in that thing miss the point or like it for the wrong reasons or just ignore the driving themes of that thing. Like, when people were complaining about diversity in Star Trek Discovery, like, I don't even fucking know how you do that. Like, diversity is one of the primary themes. It's like that and stupid time travel and space, like, in that order. And I don't get how you can enjoy Star Trek and not pick up on the diversity messaging. Like, I made a tweet at some point that's like, I just give Star Trek a complete pass for, like, being as blunt and obvious with their messaging as they've been. Like that, like, there used to be, like, an actual complaint that Star Trek was, like, just beating us over the head with this, you know, with their messaging. It was like, no, you have to, because people don't get it. There's people who miss the fucking point. Okay, it looks like that 10% community toxicity seeped into my modem, too. But we're back now, and we have our guest.
Hello, I'm Bill Spruik Bolden, and I'm friends with Jack and Jeff, and especially Jeff. I've been working with a lot lately on my latest project, and I think we might be about to talk about it.
I think we are. I think we just might be.
So, without further delay, gentlemen, let's go ahead and talk about this brilliant, beautiful, incredibly unique, as always, because Bill's producing it, project that the both of you are putting together called Pieces.
Okay, so Pieces, to talk about Pieces, first you have to talk about Music to Die Alone in Space 2. Music to Die Alone in Space 2 was my Kickstarter from 2 years ago, aimed for $2,000, raised $26,000. The idea behind it was that I would record a custom album for every backer. And so people could get a album where I would reset all the synthesizers, program in some new patterns, and let algorithms take over the rest, and then re-output the album, overlay in their choice of professional voice actor, and create an album that existed just for them, send that to them. And we are now at the conclusion of that project. I have recorded that album 310 times, and I could never have finished if it wasn't for the support of people like my wife and Jeff. Now we're ready to do it all again because I'm crazy, and Pieces, we're shooting for 1,000 copies of the album, and I have upped my workflow, made it 10 times more non-deterministic. I've learned how to build my own synths and samplers so that I can do new kinds of non-deterministic passages that weren't possible before, including the world's first non-deterministically assembled blues track, non-deterministically assembled rap track, choir music, church music, post-rock, guitar lines. It's way more organic than Music to Die Alone in Space 2. And when I say non-deterministically assembled, I mean that on every playback, the content is different. So I can hit play, make one copy, hit play again. Somebody else is getting different melodies, different rhythms, different sounds. It's awesome.
Yeah, and if how that gets put together is interesting to you, check out twitch.tv/spruik for the streams you've been doing. Those have been really cool. I know, like, I'm just a huge process nerd, so.
At Twitch.tv Spruik, you can often watch me working on these synths and samplers. So then, let's talk about the big twist. The big twist. So, dun, the big dun, twist dun. Is that on Music to Die Alone in Space 2, everybody got new music, but they all got the same story. I would overlay a performance from one of 14 professional voice actors performing the story of the astronaut who is dying alone in space. This time, the story is scrambled too. So I have about a dozen different authors working on about 20 passages where the passage is going to be 10 to 20 minutes long, and it's scrambled and sliced up, and only a tiny window appears on your copy, and every few words, it's mangled. It creates a really cool dramatic effect that sounds intentional when you listen to it. But at the same time, it turns the album into an alternate reality game. Now, you're getting one window into the apocalypse, and you might hear the first 20 seconds of a tape where you can hear two people fighting, and then somebody else might hear the next 20 seconds where there's an apology or screams. And they'd have to talk to you to learn what the fight was about, but you'd have to talk with them to learn how the fight ended. And so we're creating a structure where there is a mystery that is larger than the album. It's challenging the idea of what an album can be.
Now, there's two things I want to say here. As somebody who has tried several times to do alternate reality games, you know, I hope you keep your sanity after this project, because my gosh, the amount of work that goes into trying to create unique experiences for, can we call them players? Is it okay to call them players with, in regards to this? Is that cool with you?
In this case, I call them backers because they're on Kickstarter, okay. Or listeners, right. But yeah, cool. Yeah, we can call them players too.
And, you know, in regards to, you know, especially the exchange of information between your backers and stuff like that, do you have any plans on how that's going to be handled? Do you foresee them maybe setting up like an independent forum or something where they talk about those?
Yeah, so the only rule is I don't intend to participate in it, because I think that if I establish those parameters, then what's to stop me? Like, I could also just tell everybody the whole story. So
boo,
I think
no
it's
fun
important
at all.
That it happened without me. And what I learned from the first Kickstarter was that people found ways to get their own copies online just because they wanted to share them, even though there was no need to. They would upload their copies to YouTube. They would upload their copies to SoundCloud. They would post them in zip files. So what I'm thinking is to stay hands off and see if some backers decide to start a wiki where they would collect and annotate all the combined information they had, or start a subreddit, or start a distinct forum, or just communicate in the comments. I'll be staying hands off and let the thing grow organically. Me and the other authors have programmed in years of Easter eggs that should take a long time to pay off. And so the main hook, I think people will learn rather quickly. It's a complicated apocalypse with dozens of steps in the fall of America. And I think that everyone's going to get on board real early with figuring out the major steps. But then there are going to be individual tapes that take a look inside a single person's experience during the fall of America that still leave you with a lot to learn.
And see, I think that's incredibly beautiful, because it plays into both the overall theme of the project of every person experiencing what's going on differently, and also just having that built into, you know, this exchange of information between people. It's going to get people talking. They're going to interject their own experiences, because, you know, as I've experienced with readers on my end, nobody's going to look at a work the same. And especially when you have it where it's much more individualized like this, I think it's going to be just this beautiful exchange between everybody coming together and enjoying the music. And I have to really admire the amount of work you're putting into that aspect of it, Bill. And that's incredibly ambitious. You have both my respect and my envy right now.
Well, this is where the diverse writing team really helps. So if you look at the graphic, our team on the Kickstarter page, you'll see, I think, what's an incredibly diverse selection of Americans. We have every gender and race and location and region of the country represented. And this is where I think a lot of projects like this go wrong, is I didn't want to destroy America from the POV of a comfortable white man and be like, ah, ha, ha, everybody dies, without consulting all the kinds of people who were going to be dying. And so it was really important. Like, I brought in Darcy Little Badger from the point of view, if I'm going to be destroying this ancestral homeland of indigenous people, I need to hear the opinion of the people who were here first. And that adds a key element to the story. And so when you have all these different points of view, and you have people who've experienced life in different parts of the country in ways that I haven't, and as different individuals who aren't me, it creates details and avoids embarrassing mistakes. Just as a great example, I can say this much about Lauren Orsini's tape. Lauren lives in the D.C. area, and she lives on the same block as the Pentagon. She goes for a jog through D.C. every day. She's been there on days that it's exploded into clashes or riots or stuff, and she's also been there in active shooter situations. For her tape, I told her all the story information she would need to know about how the federal government falls and when, and told her, you are on your jog when the federal government falls. And now, because she's a person who lives this every day, she was able to take all of her fears and all of her anxiety about the things that have happened to her on her jogs and get them all out through this tape while having every detail correct. And I just couldn't have done that. You know, she passes from being in front of the Washington Monument to being in front of the White House in the appropriate length of time while having the protesters in the proper place. You can't buy that.
You're absolutely correct. And I think when it comes to, you know, creative endeavors like this, a lot of people tend to, especially with, would it be fair to call this a horror album or something along those lines? Because it feels too abstract to even adhere to some kind of label.
I would call it science fiction.
Okay.
More than horror. But it varies by tape, because one of the mm-hmm. mottos is, when America falls, human harder than ever. The good and the bad are just both doubled. And so the tapes about people coming together to save their communities, the inspirational ones, are like twice as inspirational. The tapes about what isn't great about humanity, about people sinking to the lowest level or experiencing horrible trauma, are heartbreaking or horrifying. So horror is absolutely present on the album. But continue.
I think when it comes to, you know, genres like this, people tend to pigeon themselves like into little areas in genre conventions and things like that. And especially as a writer myself, you know, if I write a horror story, I typically write from the middle class white guy's perspective, just because that's what I've lived. And there's been times before where I would forget and I would make those mistakes about writing certain other kinds of characters. And it's something that you learn. I guess the easiest way to put it is, you make the mistake once and you never make it again of typewriting a certain kind of character. So I applaud you getting a cast like this. This is awesome. And it was done with respect to perspectives. And again, you have my respect and my envy, sir, because I can barely corral myself to get a project done, much less corralling other people together. And you definitely got the team together. The only other question I personally have is, I'm looking through the Kickstarter, and it mentions using cassettes, handheld recorders, radio broadcasts, voicemails as a form of distributed storytelling. And this is something that, especially in more modern mediums, we're starting to see a lot of, with regards to the horror genre. Again, you know, found footage is totally a thing. Spooky haunted recordings, you know, lost episodes, all that kinds of stuff. How do you feel that these different mediums play into aspects of storytelling? Do they all have a certain kind of feel that you expect? I could obviously see where, like, radio broadcasts play differently than a voicemail or something like that. But can you give us any kind of insights as to how you use those to drive this narrative deeper?
Yeah. Hey, sure. Yeah. Hey, do you want to talk about the radio aspect of this project?
Yeah.
Because in case you didn't think it was, if you thought it was ambitious after this far into the interview.
Oh, I haven't even mentioned The Album Within an Album. So The Album Within an Album is another unprecedented idea because I guess I just didn't have enough things I was trying to innovate on this album. The album within an album is an album's length full of original material recorded just for this album of hypothetical songs that exist in this future that are going to be kept secret and not released until the conclusion of the project. They exist only to be distributed throughout the audio as mangled forms on the radio. So there's a passage where you're driving in a car, I think, as this entity moving through the broken American landscape, tuning your radio, and you get to hear songs. And those are going to be all the album within an album songs. So there's 12 currently songs I've commissioned that are from the POV of artists who live in 2040 destroyed America, singing their protest songs, their rage songs, their sad songs. And so you'll hear the radio tune into something and sing a few bars of this completed country song and then tune away to a hip-hop song talking about the conspiracy that's going on. And then tune away again to an angry Rush Limbaugh-style host explaining how liberals caused all this. And so that's where the medium becomes really important, because building the radio led me to the album within an album. I realized it needs songs to tune into to make this complete. And then I realized, from an artistic perspective, the song in passing is the most beautiful thing to me. Like, you're walking down the street and you walk by a cafe and you hear a song you really like, but you don't know what it is and you don't have Shazam. So all you'll ever get of that song is from when you start walking past the cafe till when you end. And that was like your time spent with it. And that's beautiful to me. And so this album makes allowances for that to happen over and over again. Maybe people will start a wiki for the lyrics of those or whatever and be like, hey, it sounds like I have something that sounds like kind of like a Disturbed song or something on mine. Does anyone else have pieces of that one? I want to know what the second verse is.
Pieces.
Well, Bill, I just got to say that alone really caught my interest. And if I can give a full confession here, we interviewed you last time for your Music to Die Alone in Space tier, and I thought it was very interesting, but it wasn't something that was necessarily my style. Okay. But with this right here, I'm sitting here looking over this, and I'm like, I want this now. Like, I want to listen to this right now. So this has gratuitously piqued my interest. And
now, it's time to flip the script, because okay, you've been interviewing me when you should be interviewing my co-creator and art director, Jeff.
I've known for a very long time that Jeff is an art guy. So you know what? Okay, yeah. Jeff, Mr. Vintage Artist Masters, formerly, I guess I should say. What are the driving aesthetics behind this album? I mean, obviously, abandoned, rusted cars, that kind of thing. I will say, though, that going through the Kickstarter, I really love the use of color. The sky actually looks like what a beautiful sky looks juxtaposed against this wrecked car. But there's other things like, you know, the overgrown foliage in one place, the no evac on the signs. What was the driving aesthetic behind this very colorful, if you will, apocalypse?
Well, without giving away too much, we had some details about like what caused some of these things to happen. Bill and myself came up with a whole long list of like just really short art descriptions that mostly fell into like some kind of major categories. One is the overgrown things, just things overgrown, and that's where you get like the, you know, the car and the parking lot and some of the buildings and stuff. But for the most part, I just gave the artist I went and got, which I did that all through, almost all of it through Fiverr. We also have Marty Napton, who's worked with Spruik on a number of things in the past as kind of our resident artist, and he's provided some of them, but most of them I went out and just found people on Fiverr and was like, yep, you're good. Let's see what you can do. And I try to give them as much freedom as possible. So there's these like very short descriptions with very few requirements, like no people, because people are gone. And, you know, just some kind of general aesthetic guidelines, and just let them run wild.
Holy cow, by the way, did you see the one Marty sent over this morning? He's just sent over a new one.
Yeah, that's good.
Oh, yeah, it's tickling my fancy. Just another art to use. He's incredible. Yeah, the art on this project is like about a dozen people submitting one and Marty doing half a dozen or so.
Yeah. And the things I loved most, when Bill asked me to be art director, I just sent like this big happy face emoji. I'm like, yes, 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 I'll do that. And I started working on it. I was like, oh, I get to go like look at art that's awesome.
There's another thing, you're ending your tale prematurely. You're making it sound like the art director is all you are. We also need to interview you about your experience of also being basically some of the business partner on this too, because Jeff has been doing the numbers for me and making sure he's been putting together the packages for the art book, and he's been putting together the packages for the vinyl albums and making sure that all that's possible. And so he's learned about page stock, weight, vinyl
all
weight.
All those fun headache-inducing details.
And he's tackled it all without a complaint. And I have so much ducks to get in a row with the music and the administration of the Kickstarter that I don't think I could have done this without Jeff. And I mean that. So, Jeff, do you want to tell us a little bit? Here I am flipping the script again. Do you want to tell us a little bit about the experience of figuring out how you were going to press these books and figuring out how you were going to press these vinyls?
I mean, it's kind of boring research stuff and just dicking around with different configuration options and settings and stuff and figuring out like, well, what's kind of a base minimal level we can do at sort of the starting goal and like what's, you know, it's a little more expensive and we should make that stretch goals and, you know, stuff like that. I don't know. That stuff to me is not as interesting as the art.
And it's gorgeous. It looks so good. And sitting here scrolling through the different pieces that are just already up on the Kickstarter, I've got to return again to how incredibly organic everything looks. I've grown up in the Deep South my entire life. And it's not uncommon to pass by abandoned buildings, abandoned mills and stuff here. And the one thing that really stuck out to me is there is a piece right under about this project where it's just this overgrown area. And for the methods with which you use to procure the art and stuff for it, Jeff, that to me looks like actual buildings I've passed just covered in kudzu and moss and, you know, southern fauna.
We actually used kudzu as a starting point for how nature reclaims organic buildings.
Yeah,
that's a very good use. Around here, I've seen entire buildings topple in a span of a couple of years because it gets in the foundation.
There's kind of an Easter egg in that picture you're referring to as well, which is fun. Jeff and I talked about this one for a while. There's Easter eggs in almost every picture.
I think I'll bring it up after the cast. I don't want to spoil it for anybody else. But yeah, Jeff, as far as the administration of things, was there anything in this project that particularly stuck out to you or was something you wanted to do from the very start?
I mean, I just wanted to do whatever I could to help make this thing happen. So, you know, whatever I could take off Bill's plate, I did. is pretty much it.
He's so bashful, isn't he, Bill?
There's a couple art things that I wanted to talk about, though, that really made my day when they happened. Little things that where artists surprised me, like the one with the car under the tree. This guy, first, from looking at like his past gigs, I could tell he was going to just nail the lighting on it, like for the shadow and the light and all that, and they did. But I didn't specify what kind of car. In my mind, I was thinking like, you know, like an old VW or something, but... No, he went with a fucking Mustang and like this iconic American car. And when I first saw that, I was like, oh, yes, perfect. Like, that's so perfect for this.
Yeah, and he actually picked a car that I think he went into the retro chic really well, because this project has kind of a thing where it's future past, where it's like 20 years in the future, but it's kind of like it's 40 years in the past in aesthetic. And he tapped into that without needing to be told.
Yeah, and the other one is that parking lot full of dead cars and flowers and stuff. That's one that in my mind would be set at like sunset or twilight or something. I thought that would be really cool. didn't put it in the art description, they did it anyways. And I was just so thrilled when I saw that one.
Yeah, going through here, the use of, again, the use of color is beautiful, and I love the very natural lighting in a lot of the pieces you guys have posted mm-hmm. here as well.
Yeah, these people, yeah, they nail the lighting on all these. I was very impressed by the quality of stuff we got back.
And then we should talk now. It's rude to talk stretch goals when you're still just on track to fund. So I think personally, there's a lot of Kickstarters that put up stretch goals on day one as part of their description, which I always think, whoa, you're getting ahead of yourself. Challenge one is to fund. Yeah. And we're on track to fund, but we haven't. We're a third of the way there, about 5 days in. So things are looking good. Mm-hmm. And when we fund, we're going to be putting up stretch goals. But we have some artists who are big names and premium tier one artists who will not be working digitally, but making real originals. And some of those are going to run us quite a bit. But that's the kind of investment we're making to make this come to life. So once the project funds, we'll be announcing that we have some artists on tap who are names that you guys and your listeners should recognize, if you get my drift.
Yeah, one that I have teased already is Eric Klug, who we know from Klug Altars.
Oh, okay, you've got my interest, man.
Yeah, just like these breathtaking altars. And I was looking into, you know, artists and stuff. And I'm like, man, what does he do, like, bigger? Like, what does he look like when he gets, you know, beyond, like, these little 2.5 by 3.5 pieces of cardboard? And it's like, oh, yeah. Yeah, that guy can paint, of course. So I got him on board. And I have to hold back from announcing the first stretch goal artist, because I just can't get into it. I got lost in her gallery when I ran across it. It's so good. But I gotta move on. I've got another magic artist from the early days lined up, which, I mean, that happens because I'm into magic art, and I've been, like, Facebook friends with Mark Aronowitz for a few years now. After meeting him at, like, it was actually Eternal Weekend 2 or 3 years ago. So he'd be like, hey, which of your artists would dig this project and be available to do it? And so yeah, we've got, like, an old school magic artist in the books. We've got a couple people that most of them I found doing research. Like, oh, hey, they did this awesome overgrown thing that, you know, that's kind of the style we're looking for. You know, and of course, those people are all professionals that I found, and they're, you know, yeah, going to cost as much as all the art so far has cost. So that's why they're stretch goals. But I will be legit disappointed if we don't hit all the stretch goals to get all the artists, because they're so good. I really, the only thing I'm, like, dreading is having to, like, email one of these artists and be like, yeah, sorry, we're not going to be able to have you on the project. Like, that's the thing I'm not looking forward to. So
well, we've only just started to grow. I signed two more celebrity voice actors that haven't been announced yet. We already have Chris Sabat, best known as the voice of Vegeta. We have Brina Palencia from The Walking Dead and One Piece, and she's actually helping write. God, I wish I could tell you about her passage. It's too ill-formed as of now for me to get into it, but boy. Well, that's about all I had to say. Mm-hmm. I could talk about this project for hours, but nobody wants to listen to it for hours.
I would be down to talk about it. But I'm blown away by how ambitious this is. This is so huge. And Jeff, like, the art you've picked out is it looks real. Like, I don't know how to describe it in terms that I can use relatably, but like, these places look like, especially the overgrown place right at the top, like, I feel like I've seen that in my life before. Does that make any sense? It's, I can empathize with the work that you guys have put into this, and it feels so, so close for me personally, especially seeing these abandoned places and these, you know, rusted out cars and stuff. So I'm speechless. This is absolutely a amazing piece of work. And like I said, Bill, you've got my attention, and you're going to get my backing as well.
Awesome. I look forward to your backing. I hope some of your listeners find this interesting enough to back. There are a lot of different tiers. For $25, you can get that, the album within an album, and all the art in high res. For $69, you get a unique piece. And up from there, different combinations of the unique piece, the art book, your unique piece on a vinyl, which makes it literally the only vinyl in the world that will ever exist of that. So take that, collectors.
Oh yeah, we buried that lead.
It's really cool, and we're going to bring it to life. We're on track and can't wait for people to begin enjoying this. Keep up on my stream at Twitch.tv Sprook, where I intermittently stream the creation of this album, and be on the lookout for more high-profile celebrity announcements.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, since this is a vaguely magic-related podcast, we should mention Pat Chapin is on board again. People may or may not remember that you made a fucking rap album about magic with him, called The Gathering.
It's true. Patrick Chapin is on this. He's writing and voice acting, and it's really good to be working with Chapin again. Not that I've ever stopped. I don't know if people actually know that Chapin and I are still working together on a regular basis. You might have heard a track called We Were Nothing featuring Chapin. He dropped earlier this year, and we're making original music again. Now, on this album, he's writing and voice acting. But it's awesome to be working with Patrick and releasing something with him again. So yeah, we got Patrick Chapin up on this.
Yeah, we also have just one of my favorite people in the world, Mikey Newman, is back for this. He was my astronaut on Music to Die Alone in Space 2. Man, he's come a long way since then, too. Like, he's...
Yeah, he's really a big name. I heard he was nominated for an Emmy.
Yeah, Movies with Mikey got nominated for an Emmy. That's very cool.
All right.
Yeah, okay, so anyway, that's all I have to say, unless anyone has any other questions.
Bill, why are you crazy? Because this, when we actually talk about this project, about everything that is involved with it, I'm like, this is fucking insane. What am I doing?
This is what I have to do. It's what it means to be an artist.
Yeah.
I do this instead of watching television. I do this instead of having children. I do this instead of, I don't know, drinking.
Yeah.
I do this to live. There's no other way for me to be. When I'm not making music, I'm dying. So that's there's really no question. And if this funds, then I'm doing this. And if this doesn't fund, then I'm getting immediately back on the horse and doing another thing. Because it's create or die when you, I don't know, have the bug that I have. And that's just legit.
So I do have one last question. How many hours of sleep are you getting a day working on this?
I do not sleep well, and I have never slept well, but easily becoming the resident DJ at the casino is worse for my sleep schedule than this. I do not have this interfering with my sleep schedule at all, whereas I almost slept through this podcast this morning because I was up. They keep me at the casino till 2 a.m. I had a fire set. This week, nobody requested Margaritaville or other songs that
thank fuck.
But people, dude, somebody came up and they're like, can you do me a big favor? I don't want to impose, but can you play 24 Karat Magic by Bruno Mars? And slipped me a $20 bill.
Nice.
And I was like, sure, just for you. And I'm thinking, you could have waited like 10 minutes. Like, do you know what it's like being a DJ at a casino? They will whip me if I don't play 24 Karat Magic by Bruno Mars.
Yeah, it's actually in the contract, yeah.
I guess we'll try and close this out. If you guys want to go ahead and give your Twitter information or, you know, wherever you can be reached, we're absolutely going to be posting the Kickstarter information in the description for the show. No worries.
Oh, yeah.
So, Jeff, go.
I'm at LowGuppy. I still Twitter, despite how awful it can be sometimes.
And Spruik, you?
I am at Spruik, at S-P-R-U-K-E. Although I will tell you right now, there is no point in following me if you don't think you're going to back this Kickstarter, because I am tweeting about nothing but for the next 30 days, because that is how it goes when you run a Kickstarter. You can also find me on Facebook at facebook.com/Spruik. I have hundreds of hours of video at youtube.com/Spruik. I have thousands of hours of DJ mixes at mixcloud.com/Spruik. And I stream myself DJing every Friday at twitch.tv/Spruik. And I stream myself making the non-deterministic ambient music engines during the week at twitch.tv/Spruik. And I have Spruik tattooed on my knuckles. And I eat Spruiks for breakfast.
And if you want to contact me anywhere, since we've been mostly safe for work, just look up Splat House Fiction on Tumblr. I'm around, and I do that kind of writing. If you want to get a hold of me on Twitter, just lean out your door and yell really loudly. Bill, thank you as ever for showing up again.
Thank you for having me. I really look forward to you and or your listeners backing this project. It means a lot to me.
And Jeff, thank you for appearing and reappearing. Hopefully we can get you stapled down to one plane of reality.
Yeah. Hopefully. I mean, I hope it doesn't involve merging the hellscape with our reality, because some of that wasn't great. But, you know, if that's what it takes to bring us all back in sync, you know, whatever. Fuck everyone.
I can do without a chair to have a podcast again.
Yeah.
Ladies also, and gentlemen, this has been... Okay.
I'm not going to let you finish just yet.
Okay.
I'm going to let you finish... No, fuck that. If you do want to hear more of me and Jack, well, let us know. We might do this more. We enjoy hanging out.
Yeah, I'm not really interested in doing necessarily a magic podcast again, but I would love to do just a nerd podcast again.
When were we ever really a magic podcast? I mean, come on.
Sometimes.
Yeah, occasionally.
Sometimes we were. Like, I vaguely remember pulling in people from the magic community.
Yeah. We usually need to talk about other shit.
We're going to go ahead and end this.
All right. This has been Not Another Magic Podcast, The Necrocast, The Giant Plug Edition. Thanks for listening.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.
And as a bonus treat, here's a little tease of part of the album within an album for peace.
If it keeps on raining, love is going to break. And the water gonna come and I have no place to stay.
Something that we never got. New Orleans is sinking in these prayers and thoughts. Pots and pans and lots of stranded tan to sands. But all we need is food, clothes, medicine. The landowner's got a plan now, ain't it funny? We lost it all, but they got insurance money. Built the dike too low to save the capital. So when the damn thing failed, nowhere to go. Didn't learn a thing from Katrina, though we couldn't see any clearer. No, I'm not your standard bystander. I am the man with the plan that was never heard. Detailed blueprints for disaster that was assured that the cost was absurd. Plan B is supplies, but surprise, surprise, there's no compromise. They can't publicize what they can't fight.